But he arched away from me, screaming, and nothing could console him, for he was not one of those children whom you may wave something shiny at and they will forget. I gave him soothing herbs and possets, even sleeping draughts, but they did nothing. The only thing that calmed him was the sea, the wind that was as restless as he was, the waves filled with their motion. He would stand in the surf, his small hand in mine, and point. The horizon I named, the open sky, the waves and tides and currents. He would whisper the sounds to himself all the rest of the day, and if I tried to pull him away, show him something else, fruits or flowers, some small spell, he would leap from me, twisting up his face. No. The worst were the days when I had to shape those two spells again. He ran from me whenever I wanted him, but the moment I took up my work, he would drum at the floor with his heels, crying for my attention. Tomorrow I will take you to the sea, I promised. But that was nothing to him, and he would tear apart the house to draw my eye. He was older by then, too big to be slung to my chest, and the disasters he could cause had grown with him. He toppled over my table filled with plates. He climbed up the shelves and smashed my files. I would set the wolves to watch him, but he was too much for them, and they fled to the garden. I could feel my panic rising. The spell would run out before I could cast it. Athena would arrive in her rage. I know what I was in those days. Unsteady, inconstant, a badly made bow. Every fault in me his raising laid bare. Every selfishness, every weakness. One day, when the spells were due, he picked up a great glass bowl and broke it in shards on his bare feet. I came running to pluck him away, to sweep and scrub, but he battered at me as if I had taken his dearest friend. At last I had to put him in a bedroom and shut the door between us. He screamed and screamed, and there came a pounding like his head against the wall. I finished my cleaning and tried to work, but my own head was beating at itself by then. I kept thinking that if I let him rage long enough, he must at last wear himself out in sleep. But he only went on, wilder and wilder as the shadows lengthened. The day was passing and the spell not done. It would be easy to say that my hands moved on their own, but that is not how it was. I was angry, burning hot. I had always sworn to myself that I would not use magic on him. It seemed like something Aietes would do, setting my will over his. But in that moment I seized the poppy, sleep drugs, all the rest, brewed them till they sizzled. I went to the room. He was kicking the pieces of shutter that he had torn from the windows. Come, I said, drink this. He drank and went back to his tearing. I did not mind now. It was almost a pleasure to watch. He would learn his lesson. He would understand who his mother was. I spoke the word. He fell like a toppled stone. His head hit the floor so loudly I gasped. I ran to him. I had thought it would be like sleep, his eyes gently closed, but his whole body was rigid, frozen mid-movement, his fingers curled into claws, his mouth open. His skin was cold beneath my fingers. Medea had said that she did not know if those slaves in her father's halls could perceive what happened to them. I knew. Behind his blank eyes I could feel his confusion and terror. I cried out in horror and the spell broke. His body sagged. Then he scrambled away, staring wildly back at me like a cornered beast. I wept. My shame was hot as blood. I'm sorry, I told him again and again. He let me come to him, take him in my arms. Gently, I touched the lump that had risen where he had struck his head. I spoke a word to ease it. The room was dark by then. Outside, the sun was gone. I held him in my lap as long as I dared, murmuring to him, singing. Then I carried him to the kitchen and gave him dinner. He ate it, clinging to me and revived. He slid down and began to run again, slamming doors, pulling everything from shelves that he could reach. I felt a weariness in me so great I thought I would sink into the earth. And every moment that passed, the spell against Athena went undone. He kept looking at me over his shoulder as if he were daring me to come at him, to witch him, to hit him. I did not know. Instead, I reached up to the highest shelf for the great clay honey jar he was always yearning for. Here, I said, take it. He ran to it, rolling it in circles until it broke to pieces. Then he wallowed in the sticky puddles and raced off, trailing threads for the wolves to lick. And so I finished the spells. It took a long time to bathe him and carry him to bed, but at last he lay beneath the quilts. He held my hand, His small, warm fingers curled around mine. Guilt and shame soared at me. He should hate me, I thought. He should flee. But I was all he had. His breath began to drag and his limbs slackened. "Why can you not be more peaceful?" I whispered. "Why must it be so hard?" As if in answer, a vision of my father's halls drifted up. The sterile earth floor, the black gleam of obsidian, the sound of the game pieces moving on their board, and my father's golden legs beside me. I had lain quiet and still, but I remembered the ravening hunger that was in me always. To climb into my father's lap, to rise and run and shout, snatch the drafts from the board and batter them against the walls, to stare at the logs until they burst into flame, to shake him for every secret, as fruits are shaken from a tree. But if I had done even one of those things, there would have been no mercy. He would have burnt me down to ash. The moon lay on my son's forehead. I saw the smudges that water and cloth had not quite scrubbed away. Why should he be peaceful? I never was, nor his father either, when I knew him. The difference was that he was not afraid to be burnt. In the long days that followed, I clutched that thought like a spar that would save me from the waves, and it did help a little. For when he stared at me, furious and defiant, his whole spirit drawn up against me, I could think of it and take one more breath. 1,000 years I had lived, but they did not feel so long as Telegonus's childhood. I had prayed that he would speak early, but then I was sorry for it, since it only gave voice to his storms. "No, no, no," he cried, wrenching away from me. And then, a moment later, he would climb over my lap, shouting, "Mother!" until my ears ached. "I am here," I told him, "right here." Yet it was not close enough. I might walk with him all day, play every game he asked for, but if my attention strayed for even a moment, he would rage and wail, clinging to me. I yearned for my nymphs then, for anyone that I might seize by the arm and say, "What is wrong with him?" But then in the next moment, I was glad no one could see what I had done to him, letting all those early months of my terror batter at his head. No wonder he stormed. "Come," I coaxed, "let's do something fun. I will show you magic. Shall I change this berry for you?" But he flung it away and ran off to the sea again. Every night when he slept, I stood over his bed and told myself, "Tomorrow I will do better." Sometimes it was even true. Sometimes we would run laughing down to the beach, and he would sit snug in my lap as we watched the waves. His feet still kicked, his hands pulled restlessly at the skin of my arms. Yet his cheek lay on my chest, and I felt the swell and fall of his breath. My patience overflowed. "Scream and scream," I thought, "I can bear it." Will it was, every hour will. Like a spell after all, but one that I had to cast upon myself. He was a great river in flood, and I must have channels ready every moment to safely draw his torrent. I began to tell him stories, easy things of a rabbit who looks for food and finds it, of a baby waiting, whose mother comes. He clamored for more, so I went on. I hoped such gentle tales would soothe his fighting soul, and maybe they did. One day I realized that the moon had come and gone since he had thrown himself to the earth. Another moon passed, and somewhere in those months was the last time he ever screamed. I wish I could remember when it was. No, I wish rather I could have told myself when it would come, so all those hopeless days I could have looked to its horizon. His mind put forth leaves, thoughts and words that seemed to spring out of the air. 6 years old he was. His brow had cleared, and he would watch me working in the garden, hacking at some root. "Mother," he said, putting his hand on my shoulder, "try cutting here." He took out a little knife he had begun to carry, and the root gave way to him. "See," he said gravely, "it is easy." He still loved the sea. He knew every shell and fish. He made rafts out of logs and floated in the bay. He blew bubbles into the tidal pools and watched the crabs skitter. "Look at this one," he would say, towing me by the hand. "I have never seen a larger. I have never seen a smaller. This is the brightest. This is the blackest. This crab has lost one claw, and here its other is growing larger to take its place. Is that not clever?" Once again, I wished that someone else was there on the island. Not to commiserate now, but to cherish him with me. I would say, "Look, Can you believe it? We have come through the rocks and winds. I failed him, yet he is a sweet wonder of this world. He made a face, for he saw that my eyes were wet. Mother, he said, the crab will be fine. I told you, the claw is already growing back. Now come here and look at this one. It has spots like eyes. Can it see from them, do you think? At night, he no longer wanted my stories. He made up his own. I think it is where his wildness went, for every tale was filled with outlandish creatures, griffins and leviathans and chimeras who came to feed from his hands, whom he led on adventures or else bested with clever stratagems. Perhaps any child with only his mother for company would have been so imaginative. I cannot say, but his face was rapt as he conjured those visions. He seemed to age with every day, 8 and 10 and 12. His gaze grew serious, his limbs tall and strong. He had a habit of tapping one finger on the table as he gave out morals like an old man. He liked best the stories of courage and virtue rewarded. And that is why you must never, you must always, that is why one should be sure to... I loved his certainty. His world that was an easy place of right action divided sharply from wrong, of mistake and consequence, of monsters defeated. It was no world I knew, but I would live in it as long as he would let me. It was one of those nights, summer, the pigs truffling softly below our window. He was 13. I laughed and said, "You have more tales in you than your father." I saw him hesitate, as if I were a rare bird he feared to put to flight. He had asked about his father before, but I had always said, "Not yet." "Go on," I said and smiled at him. "I will answer you. It is time." "Who was he?" "A prince who came to this island. He had 1,001 tricks in him." "What did he look like?" I had thought my memories of Odysseus would taste of salt, but there was a pleasure in conjuring him up. Dark-haired, dark-eyed, with red in his beard. His hands were large and his legs short and strong. He was always faster than you expected him to be. "Why did he leave?" The question was like an oak seedling, I thought. Simple green shoot above, but underneath the taproot burrowed, spreading deep. I took a breath. "When he left, he did not know I carried you. He had a wife at home, and a son as well. But it was more than that. Gods and mortals do not last together happily. He was right to leave when he did." His face, drawn together in thought. "How old was he?" "Not far over 40. I saw him counting. "So not even 60 yet. He still lives." It was strange to think of. Odysseus walking on Ithaca's shore, breathing the air. I had had so little time for dreaming since Telegonus was born. But the image felt solid, wholesome before me. "I believe he does. He was very strong. In spirit, I mean." Now that the gates were open, he sought all I could remember of Odysseus. His lineage, his kingdom, his wife, his son, his childhood occupations, his honors in the war. The stories were still in me, vivid as when Odysseus had first told them, those 1,000 wily conspiracies and trials. Yet a strange thing happened when I began to recite them back to Telegonus. I found myself hesitating, omitting, altering. With my son's face before me, their brutalities shone through as they never had before. What I had thought of as an adventure now seemed blood-soaked and ugly. Even Odysseus himself seemed changed, callous instead of unflinching. The few times I did leave a story as it was, my son would frown. "You did not tell it correctly," he said. "My father would never have done such a thing." "You are right," I would say. "Your father let that Trojan spy with his weasel skin cap go, and he returned safely home to his family. Your father always kept his word." Telegonus would beam. "I knew he was an honorable man. Tell me more of his noble deeds." And so I would spin another lie. Would Odysseus have reproached me for it? I did not know, and I did not care. I would have done worse, much worse, to make my son happy. From time to time in those days, I wondered what I would tell Telegonus if he ever asked me for my own stories. How I might polish Aeetes, Pasiphae, Scylla, the pigs. In the end, I did not have to try. He never asked. He began spending long hours away upon the island. When he came back, he would be flushed and spilling over with talk. His limbs were stretching, and I heard the crack in his voice. "Tell me more about my father," he said. "Where is Ithaca? What is it like? How far from here, and what dangers on the way? It was autumn, and I was boiling the fruits in syrup for winter. I could have made the trees bloom fresh at any time, but this was something I had come to enjoy. The bubbling sugars, the translucent jewel colours, the storing up of a good season in my jars. Mother! He came shouting into the house. There is a ship which needs us. They are off our shore, half foundered. They will sink if they do not land. It was not the first time he had spotted sailors. They passed often by our isle, but it was the first time he had wanted to help them. I let him pull me out to the cliff. It was true. The ship was tilted over and the hull taking in water. See? Just this once, will you drop the spell? I'm sure they will be very grateful. How would you know? I wanted to say. Often those men in most need hate most to be grateful and will strike at you just to feel whole again. Please, he said. What if it is someone like my father? There is no one like your father. They will sink, mother. They will drown. We cannot just stand here and watch. We must do something. His face was stricken. His eyes were sheened with tears. Please, mother, I cannot bear to watch them die. This once, I said. Once only. We could hear their shouts carried on the wind. Sure, ashore. They turned their boat, lurching towards us. I made him promise to stay hidden while they climbed the trail up to the house. He was to remain in his room until the wine was drunk and to leave again at my slightest signal. He agreed to all of it. He would have agreed to anything. I went to the kitchen and brewed my old potion. I felt as if I stood in two rooms at once. Here I was, mixing the herbs I had mixed 100 times, my fingers finding their old shapes. And here was my son, leaping and wild. Where are they from, can you tell? What rocks do you think they staved on? Can we help them fix the hull? I do not know how I answered. My blood had gone solid in my veins. I was trying to remember that trick of command I used to have. Come in, of course I will help you. Will you not have more wine? Though I expected it, I started when the knock came. I opened the door and there they were, ragged, hungry, desperate as always. The captain, did he look like a coiled snake? I could not tell. I felt a sudden gagging nausea. I wanted to slam the door shut on them, but it was too late for that. They had seen me now, and my son was pressed to the wall, listening to everything. I had warned him that I might need to use magic on them. He had nodded. Of course, mother, I understand. But he had no idea. He had never heard the crack of ribs remaking themselves, the wet tearing of flesh from its shape. They sat at my benches. They ate and the wine went down their throats. Still, I watched the captain. His eyes were keen. They lingered on the room, on me. He rose. Lady, he said. Your name? Whom should we honour for our meal? I would have done it then. Ripped them from themselves. But Telegonus was already stepping out into the hall. He wore a cape and a sword at his waist. He stood tall and straight as a man. He was 15.
You are in the house of the goddess Circe, daughter of Helios, and her son, called Telegonus. We saw your ship founder and allowed you to come to our island, though usually it is closed to mortals. We will be glad to help you all we can while you are here.
His voice was crackless. Firm as seasoned planks. His eyes were dark as his father's, but there were flecks of yellow that shone in them. The men stared. I stared. I thought of Odysseus, separated from Telemachus for years. The shock it must have been to see him suddenly grown. The captain knelt.
Goddess, great lord, the blessed fates themselves must have brought us here.
Telegonus gestured for the man to rise. He took the head of the table and served out food from the platters. The men scarcely ate. They were growing towards him like vines to sun, their faces awestruck, competing to tell him their stories. I watched, wondering at where such a gift had hidden in him all this while. But then I had done no magic till I had plants to work upon. I let him go down to the shore with them, help them with their repairs. I did not worry, or at least not much. My spell over the island's beasts would protect him, but more than that, his own spell would, for those men were like creatures enchanted. He was younger than all of them, but they nodded at every word from his lips. He showed them where the best groves were, what trees they could chop down. He showed them the streams and shade, 3 days they stayed while they patched the hole in their ship and fed themselves upon our stores. In all that time, he left them only when they slept. Lord, they called him, when they spoke of him, and solicited his opinion earnestly, as if he were some master carpenter of 90 instead of a boy seeing his first hull. Lord Telegonus, sir, what do you think? Will this do? He examined the patch. Nicely, I think. Well constructed. They beamed, and when they sailed, they hung off the side, shouting their thanks and prayers. His face stayed bright as long as he could see the ship. Then his joy bled away. For many years, I confess, I had hoped he might be a witch. I had tried to teach him about my herbs, their names and properties. I used to do small spells in his presence, hoping one might catch his eye, but he never showed even the faintest interest. Now I saw why. Witchcraft transforms the world. He only wanted to join it. I tried to say something, I do not know what, but he was already turning from me, heading for the woods. He kept outside all that winter, and all that spring and summer too. From the sun's first light in the sky until its setting, I did not see him. A few times I asked him where he went, and he waved his hand vaguely at the beach. I did not press. He was preoccupied, always running somewhere breathlessly, coming home flushed with burrs all over his tunic. I saw the strength rising in his shoulders, his jaw widening. "That cave down by the beach," he said. "The one where my father kept his ship. Can I have it?" "Everything here is yours," I said. "But can it be mine alone? You promised not to go in." I remembered how much my young privacies had meant to me. "I promise," I said. I have wondered since if he used those same charms on me that he had worked on the sailors, for I was like a well-fed cow in those days, placid, unquestioning. "Let him go," I told myself. "He is happy, he is growing. What harm can find him here?" "Mother," he said. It was just after dawn, the pale light warming the leaves. I was kneeling in the garden, weeding. He was not usually up so early, but it was his birthday. 16 he was. "I made you honeyed pears," I said. He held up his hand, showing a half-eaten fruit, shining with juice. "I found them, thank you." He paused. "I have something to show you." I wiped off the dirt and followed him down the forest path to the cave. Inside was a small boat, near the size Glaucus's had been. "Whose is this?" I demanded. "Where are they?" He shook his head. His cheeks were flushed, his eyes bright. "No, mother, it is mine. I had the idea before the men came, but seeing them made it go much faster. They gave me some of their tools and showed me how to make the others. What do you think?" Now that I looked, I could see that its sail was stitched from my sheets, its boards roughly planed, still full of splinters. I was angry, but a wondering pride glowed in me as well. My son had built it alone, with nothing but crude tools and his will. "It is very trim," I said. He grinned. "It is, isn't it? He said I should not say anything, but I did not want to keep it from you. I thought..." He stopped at the look on my face. "Who said?" "It is all right, mother. He means me no harm. He has been helping me. He said he used to visit often, that you were old friends." Old friends. How had I not seen this danger? I remembered now Telegonus's giddiness when he would come home at night. My nymphs used to come back with that same face. Athena could not cross my spell, no, she had no powers in the underworld. But he walked everywhere. When he was not rolling his dice, he led the spirits to the doors of Hades himself. God of meddling, God of change. "Hermes is no friend of mine. Tell me everything he said to you, at once." His face was mottled with embarrassment. "He said he could help me, and he did. He said that it must be sudden. If a scab is to come off," he said, "the best way is quickly. It will not even take me half a month, and I will be back by spring. We have tried it in the bay, and it is sound." His words tumbled out so fast I struggled to pass them. "What do you mean? What will not take you half a month?" "The journey," he said, "to Ithaca. Hermes said he can lead me around the monsters, so you do not have to fear about that. If I sail at the noontide, I will make the next island before dark." I felt speechless, as if he had torn the tongue from my mouth. He put a hand to my arm. "You do not have to worry. I will be safe. Hermes is my ancestor through my father, he tells me. He would not betray me. Mother, do you hear?" He was peering at me anxiously from beneath his hair. My blood ran cold to see his greenness. had I ever been so young. "He is a god of lies," I said. "Only fools put their faith in him." He flushed, but a defiance had come into his face. "I know what he is. I do not just rely on him. I have packed my bow, and he has been teaching me a little spear work besides." He gestured to a stick leaning in the corner, one of my old kitchen knives laced to its end. He must have seen my horror, for he added, "Not that I will have to use it. It is just a few days to Ithaca, and then I'll be safe with my father." He was leaning forward, earnestly. He thought he had answered all my objections. He was proud of himself, bright in his new forged plans. How easily those words tumbled from him. Safe. My father. I felt myself running with swift, clear rage. "What makes you think you will be welcome on Ithaca? All you know of your father is stories, and he already has a son. How do you think Telemachus will like his bastard brother appearing?" He flinched a little at bastard, but answered bravely, "I don't think he would mind. I don't come for his kingdom or his inheritance. And so I will explain to him. I will stay the whole winter, and there will be time for us to know each other." "So that is it? It is settled. You and Hermes have the plan, and now you think all that is needed is for me to wish you a fair wind." He looked at me, uncertain. "Tell me," I said, "what does all-knowing Hermes say about his sister who wants you dead? About the fact that you will be killed the moment you step away from the island?" He nearly sighed. "Mother, it was so long ago. Surely she has forgotten." "Forgotten?" My voice clawed the cables. "Are you an idiot? Athena does not forget. She will eat you in one gulp, like an owl takes a stupid mouse." His face paled, but he pressed on like the valiant heart he was. "I will take my chances." "You will not. I forbid it." He stared at me. I had never forbidden him anything before. "But I must go to Ithaca. I've built the ship. I'm ready." I stepped towards him. "Let me explain more clearly. If you leave, you will die. So you will not sail. And if you try, I will burn that boat of yours to cinders." His face was blank with shock. I turned and walked away. He did not sail that day. I stalked back and forth in my kitchen, and he kept to his woods. It was dusk when he returned to the house. He banged through the trunks, loudly gathering up bedding. He had come only to show me that he would not stay beneath my roof. When he passed me, I said, "You want me to treat you like a man, but you act like a child. You have been protected here your whole life. You do not understand the dangers that wait for you in the world. You cannot simply pretend that Athena does not exist." He was ready for me, like tinder for the spark. "You're right. I don't know the world. How could I? You don't let me out of your sight. Athena stood upon that very hearth and demanded I give you to her so she could kill you." "I know," he said. "You've told me 100 times. Yet she has not tried since, has she? I'm alive, aren't I?" "Because of the spells I cast and carry." I rose to face him. "Do you know what I have had to do to keep them strong? The hours I have spent fretting over them, testing them to be sure she cannot break through. You like doing that?" "Like it?" The laugh scraped from me. "I like doing my own work, which I have scarcely had time for since you were born." "Then go do your spells. Go do them, and let me leave. Be honest. You do not even know if Athena is still angry. Have you tried to speak with her? It has been 16 years. He said it as if it were 16 centuries. He could not imagine the scope of God, the mercilessness that comes of seeing generations rise and fall around you. He was mortal and young. A slow afternoon felt like a year to him. I could feel my face kindling, gathering heat. "You think all the gods are like me, that you may ignore them as you please, treat them as your servants, that their wishes are only flies to be brushed aside, but they will crush you for pleasure. For spite. Fear in the gods, fear in the gods, that is all you talk about. It is all you've ever talked about. Yet 1,000,000 men and women walk this world and live to be old. Some of them are even happy, mother. They do not just cling to safe harbors with desperate faces. I want to be one of them. I mean to be. Why can't you understand that?" The air around me had begun to crackle. "You are the one who does not understand. I have said you will not leave, and that is the end of it." "So that's it, then? I just stay here my whole life, until I die? I never even try to leave?"
"If need be."
"No!" He He slammed the table between us.
I will not do it. There is nothing for me here. Even if another ship comes and I beg you to let it land, what then? A few days' respite, then they will leave and I will still be trapped. If this is life, then I would rather die. I would rather Athena kills me, do you hear? At least then I will have seen one thing in my life that was not this island.
My vision went white.
I do not care what you would rather. If you are too stupid to save your own life, then I will do it for you. My spells will do it.
For the first time, he faltered.
What do you mean? I mean, you would not even know what you missed. You would never think of leaving again.
He took a step backwards.
No, I will not drink your wine. I will not touch anything you give me.
I could taste the venom in my mouth. It was a pleasure to see him frightened at last.
You think that will stop me? You have never understood how strong I am.
His look, I will remember all my life. A man who has seen the veil lifted and beholds the true face of the world. He wrenched open the door and fled into the dark. I stood there a long time. A bolt-struck tree scorched to its roots. Then I walked down to the shore. The air was cool, but the sand still held the day's heat. I thought of all the hours I had carried him there, his skin against mine. I had wanted him to walk freely in the world, unburned and unafraid. Now I had gotten my wish. He could not conceive of a relentless goddess with her spear aimed at his heart. I had not told him of his infancy, how angry and difficult it was. I had not told him the stories of the god's cruelty, of his own father's cruelty. I should have, I thought. For 16 years I had been holding up the sky and he had not noticed. I should have forced him to go with me to pick those plants that saved his life. I should have made him stand over the stove while I spoke the words of power. He should understand all I had carried in silence, all that I had done for his safe keeping. But then what? He was somewhere in the trees, hiding from me. So easily those spells had risen in my mind, the ones that would let me cut his desires from him, like paring rot from fruit. I ground my jaw. I wanted to rage and tear myself and weep. I wanted to curse Hermes for his half-truths and temptations, but Hermes was nothing. I had seen Telegonus's face when he used to look into the sea and whisper, "Horizon." I closed my eyes. I knew the shore so well I did not have to see to walk. When he was a child, I used to make a list of all the things I would do to keep him safe. It was not much of a game, because the answer was always the same. Anything. Odysseus had told me a story once about a king who had a wound that could not be healed, not by any doctor, not by any amount of time. He went to an oracle and heard its answer. Only the man who had given the wound could fix it, with the same spear he had used to make it. So the king had limped across the world until he found his enemy, who mended him. I wished Odysseus were there so I could ask him, but how did the king get that man to help him, the one who had struck him so deep? The answer that came to me was from a different tale. Long ago, in my wide bed, I had asked Odysseus, "What did you do when you could not make Achilles and Agamemnon listen?" He'd smiled in the firelight. "That is easy. You make a plan in which they do not." Chapter 20. I found him in the olive grove. The blankets were tangled around him as if he had fought on against me in his dreams. "My son," I said. The words were loud in the still air. It was not dawn yet, but I felt it coming. The great rolling wheels of my father's chariot. "Telegonus." His eyes opened and his hands flew up to ward me off. The pain was like a dagger's point. "I come to say that you may go, and I will help you, but there must be conditions." Did he know how much those words cost me? I do not think he could. It is youth's gift not to feel its debts. The joy was already washing over him. He threw himself upon me, pressed his face to my neck. I closed my eyes. He smelled like green leaves and running sap. We had breathed only each other for 16 years. 2 days' delay, I said, and 3 things within them. He nodded eagerly. "Anything." Now that I had lost, he was pliant. At least he was gracious in victory. I led him to the house and filled his arms with herbs and bottles. Together we carried them clinking down to his ship. There upon his deck I began chopping, grinding, mixing my pastes. He surprised me by watching. Usually he drifted away when I did spells.
What will it do?
It is a protection.
Against what?
Whatever I can think of. Whatever Athena can summon. Storms, leviathans, a split hull.
Leviathans?
I was glad to see him pale a little.
This will keep it at bay.
If Athena wants to strike at you by sea, she will have to do it herself, directly, and I think she cannot, for she is bound by the fates. You must keep to the boat, and as soon as you land on Ithaca, go to your father and ask him to intercede with Athena for you. She is his patron and may listen. Swear to me.
I will.
His face was solemn in the shadows. I pored those drafts over each rough board, every inch of sail, speaking my charms.
May I try? He said.
I gave him what was left of a draft. He drenched a bit of the deck, spoke the words he had heard me say. He poked at the wood.
Did it work?
No, I said.
How do you know what words to use?
I speak what has meaning for me. His face worked with effort, as if he pushed a boulder up a hill. He stared at the boards and spoke different words, then different words still. The deck was unchanged. He looked at me, accusing.
It is hard.
In spite of everything, I laughed.
Did you not think it was?
Listen, when you set out to build this ship, you didn't lift an axe once and expect it to be finished. It was work, day after day of it. Witchcraft is the same. I have labored for centuries and still I have not mastered it.
But it is more than that, he said. It is also that I am not a witch like you.
It was my father I thought of, all those years ago when he had turned the log in our hearth to ash and said, "And that is the least of my powers."
It is likely you are not a witch, I said.
But you are something else, something you have not found yet, and that is why you go. His smile reminded me of Ariadne's, warm as summer grass.
Yes, he said.
I led him to a shaded part of the beach. While he ate the last of the pears, I marked out his route with stones, tracing the stops and dangers. He would not go past Scylla. There were other ways to Ithaca. That Odysseus had not been able to take them had been a piece of Poseidon's vengeance.
If Hermes helps you, that is well, but you must never depend on him. Anything he says is written on the wind.
And always you must be careful of Athena. She may come to you in other forms, a beautiful maiden, perhaps. You must not be taken in, not by any temptation she would offer.
Mother, his face was red, I'm looking for my father, that's all I think of.
I said no more. We were gentler with each other in those days than we had been even before our fight. In the evenings we sat together at the hearth. He had a foot stuck under one of the lions. It was only autumn, but the nights were cool already. I served his favorite meal, fish stuffed with roasted herbs and cheeses. He ate and let me lecture him. Penelope, I said, show her every honor, kneel before her, offer her praises and gifts. I will give you suitable ones. She is reasonable, but no woman is happy with her husband's byblow at her feet. And Telemachus, beware of him above all. He is the one with the most to lose from you. Many bastards have become kings in their day, and he will know it. Do not trust him. Do not turn your back on him. He will be clever and quick, trained by your father himself.
I'm good with the bow.
Against oak boles and pheasants, you are not a warrior. He took a breath.
Anyway, whatever he tries, your powers will guard me.
I stared at him in horror.
Do not be a fool. I have no powers that can serve you away from this place. To rely on that is death.
He touched my arm.
Mother, I only mean that he is a mortal. I am half your blood and have the tricks that come with that.
What tricks? I wanted to shake him.
A little glamour? A way of charming mortals?
His face, so full of its bold hopes, made me feel old. His youth had swelled in him, ripening. The dark curls hung into his eyes and his voice had deepened. Girls and boys would sigh over him, but all I saw were the thousand soft places of his body where his life might be ended. The bareness of his neck looked obscene in the firelight. He leaned his head against mine.
I will be fine, I promise you.
You cannot make that promise, I wanted to shout. You know nothing. But whose fault was that? I had kept the face of the world veiled from him. I had painted his history in bright, bold colors, and he had fallen in love with my art. And now it was too late to go back and change it. If I was so old, I should be wise. I should know better than to howl when the bird was already flown. Three things I had told him we must do. but the last was for me alone. He did not question me about it. Some spell, he thought. Some herb she wants to grub up. I waited until he went to bed. Then I walked by starlight to the ocean's edge. The waves slid across my feet, twisting at the hem of my dress. I was near the cave where Telegonus's boat waited. In a few hours he would board it, heave up the square rock anchor, unfurl the sail with its ragged stitches. He was a sweet boy, and would wave to me as long as he knew I could see. Then he would turn, straining his eyes for the small, rocky island that lay at the end of his hopes. I was remembering my grandfather's halls, the black currents of Oceanus, that great river that girdles all the earth. If a god had Naiad blood, they could slip inside the waves and be borne onwards through tunnels of rock, through 1,000 tributaries, until they were brought to the place where its stream ran beneath the very bottom of the sea itself. We used to go there, Aetes and I. Where the two waters met, they did not mingle, but made a sort of membrane, viscous as a jellyfish. Through it you could watch the glimmers of phosphorescence in the ocean's dark, and if you pressed your hand to it, you could feel the deep water on the other side, shockingly cold. Our fingers would come back tingling and tasting of salt. Behold, Aetes had said. He pointed to something moving in that endless murk, a pale grey shadow gliding forward, huge as a ship. It bore down on us, ghostly wings silent in the black. The only sound was the scrape of its spine tail dragging on the sand floor. Trigon, my brother named it. The greatest of its kind, a god itself. Father Ouranos, maker of the world, was said to have placed it there for safety, for the poison in the creature's tail was the most potent in the universe. A single touch would kill a mortal instantly, condemn a great god to an eternity of torment. And a lesser god? What would it do to us? We stared at its eerie alien face, its flat, slashing mouth. We watched its white gilled stomach pass over us. Aetes' eyes had been wide and bright. Think of the weapon it would make. I was about to break my exile. I knew it. It was why I had waited for night, and the drifting clouds across my aunt's eyes. If I succeeded, I would return by morning before my absence was noticed. And if I did not, well, I would likely be past punishments. I stepped into the waves. They rose over my legs, my belly. They rose over my face. I did not have to weight myself with rocks as a mortal would have, fighting against my own buoyancy. I walked steadily down the ocean's shelves. Above me, the tides kept up their relentless motion, but I was too deep to feel them. My eyes lit the way. The sand stirred around me, and a flounder darted from my feet. No other creatures came near. They could smell my naiad blood, or perhaps the lingering poisons on my hands from so many years of witcheries. I wondered if I should have tried to speak to the sea nymphs, seek their aid, but I did not think they would like what I had come to do. Deeper I went, falling into the fathoms of blackness. That water was not my element, and it knew it. The chill dug at my bones, the salt scoured my face, the ocean's weight piled like mountains on my shoulders. But endurance had always been my virtue, and I kept on. In the distance, I glimpsed the floating hulks of whales and giant squids. I gripped my knife, its edge sharp as the bronze could hold, but they too stayed away. At last, I landed upon the sea's lowest floor. The sand was so cold it burned my feet. All was silent there, the water utterly still. The only light came from drifting strands of luminescence. He was wise, this god, to make his visitors travel to such a hostile place where nothing lived but him. I cried out, "Great Lord of the Deep, I am come from the world to challenge you." I heard no sound. Around me stretched the blind expanse of salt. Then the darkness parted and he came. Huge he was. White and grey, burned onto the depths like an afterimage of the sun. His silent wings rippled, rills of current flowing off their tips. His eyes were thin and slitted like a cat's, his mouth a bloodless slash. I stared. When I had stepped into the water, I had told myself that this would be only another Minotaur to wrestle, another Olympian I might outwit. But now, with his ghastly immensity before me, I quailed. This creature was older than all the lands of the world, old as the first drop of salt. Even my father would be like a child before him. You could no more stand against such a thing than stem the sea. Cold terror sluiced through me. My whole life I had feared a great horror was coming for me. I did not have to wait any more. It was here. For what purpose do you challenge me? All the great gods have the power to speak in thoughts, but hearing that creature in my mind turned my belly to water. I come to win your poisoned tail. And why would you desire such strength?
Athena, daughter of Zeus, seeks my son's life. My power cannot protect him, but yours can.
His unblinking eyes rested on mine. I know who you are, daughter of the sun. All that the sea touches comes to me at last in the depths. I have tasted you. I have tasted all your family. Your brother came once, also seeking my power. He went away empty-handed like all the rest. I am not such a one as you may fight. The despair rolled through me, for I knew he spoke truth. All the monsters of the depths were covered in scars from battles with their brother Leviathans. Not him. He was smooth all over, for none dared to cross his ancient power. Even Aeetes had recognized his limit.
Still, I said, I must try. For my son.
It is impossible. The words were flat as the rest of him. Moment by moment I could feel my will leeching from me, bled away by the relentless chill of those waves and his unblinking gaze. I forced myself to speak.
I cannot accept that, I said. My son must live.
There is no must to the life of a mortal except death.
If I cannot challenge you, perhaps I can give you something in exchange. Some gift, perform a task.
The slit of his mouth opened in silent laughter. What could you have that I want? Nothing, I knew it. He regarded me with his pale cat eyes. My law is as it has ever been. If you would take my tail, you must first submit to its poison. That is the price. Eternal pain, in exchange for a few more mortal years for your son. Is it worth the cost? I thought of childbirth, which had nearly ended me. I thought of it going on and on, with no cure, no salve, no relief.
You offered the same to my brother?
The offer stands for all. He refused. They always do. It gave me a sort of strength to know it.
What are the conditions?
When you have no more need of its power, cast it into the waves, so it may return to me.
That is all, you swear it.
You would seek to bind me, child.
I would know you will honor your bargain.
I will honor it. The currents moved around us. If I did this thing, Telegonus would live. That was all that mattered.
I'm ready, I said. Strike.
No, you must put your hand to the venom yourself.
The water sucked at me. The darkness shriveled my courage. The sand was not smooth, but jumbled with pieces of bone.
All that died in the sea came to rest there at last. My skin rose, prickling and prickling, as if it would tear away and leave me. There was no mercy among the gods. I had known it all my life. I made myself walk forward. Something caught my foot, a rib cage. I pulled free. If I stopped, I would never move again.
I came to the seam where his tail joined grey skin. The flesh above looked unwholesomely soft, like something rotted. The spine rasped faintly against the ocean floor. Up close I could see its sawtooth edge, and I smelled its power, thick and gagging sweet. Would I be able to climb out of the deep again once the venom was in me? Or would I only lie there, clutching the tail while my son died in the world above? Do not draw it out, I told myself. But I could not move another inch. My body, with its simple good sense, balked at self-destruction. My legs tensed to flee, to scramble back to the safety of the dry world, just as Aeetes had before me, and all the others who had come for Trigon's power. Around me was murk and dark currents. I set Telegonus's bright face before me. I reached.
My hand passed through empty water, touching nothing. The creature was floating in front of me again, its flat gaze on mine. It is finished. My mind was black as that water. It was as if time had skipped.
I do not understand.
You would have touched the poison. That is enough. I felt as though I were mad. How can this be? I am old as the world, and make the conditions that please me. You are the first to meet them. He rose from the sand. The beat of his wing brushed my hair, and when he stopped, the seam where his tail met his body was before me again. Cut. Begin in the flesh above, else the venom will leak. His voice was calm, as if he told me to slice a fruit. I felt dizzied, still reeling. I looked at that skin, unmarked and delicate as the inside of a wrist. I could no more imagine cutting it than an infant's throat.
You cannot allow this, I said. It must be a trick. I could blight the world with such power. I could threaten Zeus.
The world you speak of is nothing to me. You have won. Now take the prize. Cut. His voice was neither harsh nor gentle, yet I felt it like a lash. The water pressed upon me, vast depths stretching out into their endless night. His soft flesh waited before me, smooth and grey, and still I did not move.
You were ready to fight me, David. Not if I am willing.
My stomach churned against itself. Please, do not make me do this.
Make you? Child, you have come to me.
I could not feel the knife handle in my hand. I could not feel anything. My son seemed distant as the sky. I lifted the blade, touched its tip to the creature's skin. It tore as flowers tear, ragged and easy. The golden ichor welled up, drifting over my hands. I remember what I thought. Surely I am condemned for this. I can craft all the spells I want, all the magic spears. Yet I will spend the rest of my days watching this creature bleed. The last shred of skin parted. The tail came free in my hand. It was nearly weightless, and up close there was a quality to it, almost like iridescence. Thank you, I said, but my voice was air. I felt the currents move. The grains of sand whispered against each other. His wings were lifting. The darkness around us shimmered with clouds of his gilded blood. Beneath my feet were bones of 1,000 years. I thought, I cannot bear this world a moment longer.
Then, child, make another.
He glided off into the dark, trailing a ribbon of gold behind him. It was a long way back up with that death in my hand. I saw no creature, not even in the distance. They had disliked me before. Now they fled. When I emerged onto the beach, it was nearly dawn, and there was no time to rest. I went to the cave and found the old stick Telegonus had been using as a spear. Still trembling a little, my hands unwound the cord that bound the knife to its end. I stood a moment looking at its crooked length, wondering if I should find a new haft. But this was what he had practiced with, and I thought it safer to keep it as he was used to, crooks and all. I held the spine gently by its base. It had filmed over with a clear fluid. I bound it to the stick's end with twine and magic, then fitted over it a sheath of leather, enchanted with moly to keep the poison at bay. He was sleeping, his face smooth, his cheeks faintly flushed. I stood watching him until he woke. He started up, then squinted. What is that? Protection. Do not touch anything but the shaft. A scratch is death to men and torment to gods. Always keep it sheathed. It is only for Athena or utmost danger. It must return to me after. He was fearless. He had always been. Without hesitation, he reached and took the haft against his palm. This is lighter than bronze. What is it? The tale of Trigon. The stories of monsters had always been his favorite. He stared at me. Trigon? His voice was filled with wonder. You took his tail from him? No, I said. He gave it to me. For a price. I thought of that gold blood staining the ocean depths. Carry it now and live. He knelt before me, his eyes on the ground. Mother, he began. Goddess. I put my fingers to his mouth. No. I drew him up. He was as tall as I was. Do not start now. It does not suit you, nor me either. He smiled at me. We sat together at the table, eating the breakfast I had made. Then we readied the ship, loading it with stores and guest gifts, dragging it to the water's edge. His face grew brighter by the minute. His feet skimmed the earth. He let me embrace him a last time. I will give Odysseus your greetings, he said,
I will bring you back so many stories, Mother, you will not believe them all. I will get you so many presents you won't be able to see the deck.
I nodded. I touched my fingers to his face, and he sailed away, waving indeed, until he vanished from my sight. Chapter 21. The winter storms came early that year. It rained in stinging drops that scarcely seemed to wet the ground. A stripping wind followed, tearing the leaves from the trees in a day. I had not been alone on my island in, I could not count, a century? Two? I had told myself that when he was away I would do all the things I had set aside for 16 years. I would work at my spells from dawn until dusk, dig up roots and forget to eat, harvest the withy stems and weave baskets till they pile to the ceiling. It would be peaceful, the days drifting by, a time of rest. Instead, I paced the shore, gazing out as if I could make my eyes stretch all the way to Ithaca. I counted the moments, measuring each one against his journey. He would be stopping for fresh water now. Now he would be sighting the island. He would have made his way to the palace and knelt. Odysseus would... what? I had not told him I was pregnant before he left. I had told him so little. What would he make of a child come from us? It will be well, I assured myself. He is a boy to be proud of. Odysseus would see his qualities clearly, just as he had picked out Daedalus's loom. He would take him into his confidence and teach him all those arts of mortal men, swordplay, archery, hunting, speaking in council. Telegonus would sit at feasts and charm the Ithacans while his father looked on proudly. Even Penelope would be won over, and Telemachus. Perhaps he might find a place in their court, going back and forth between us, and so make a good life. And what else, Circe? Will they ride griffins and all become immortal? The air smelled of frost, and one or two flakes trickled from the sky. 1,000 times I had crossed Iaia's slopes. The poplars, black and white, lacing their bare arms. The cornels and apple trees with fallen fruits still shriveling on the ground. The fennel tall as my waist. The sea rocks white with drying salt. Overhead, the skimming cormorants called to the waves. Mortals like to name such natural wonders changeless, eternal. But the island was always changing. That was the truth, flowing endlessly through its generations. 300 years and more had passed since I had come. The oak that creaked over my head I had known as a sapling. The beach ebbed and flowed, its curves changing with every winter season. Even the cliffs were different, carved by the rain and wind, by the claws of countless scrabbling lizards, by the seeds that stuck and sprouted in their cracks. Everything was united by the steady rise and fall of nature's breath. Everything except for me. For 16 years I had pushed the thought aside. Telegonus made it easy, his wild babyhood filled with Athena's threats, then the tantrums, his blooming youth and all the messy details of life that he trailed behind him every day. The tunics that must be washed, the meals served, the sheets changed. But now that he was gone, I could feel the truth lifting its head. Even if Telegonus survived Athena, even if he made it all the way to Ithaca and back, still I would lose him. To shipwreck or to sickness, to raids or wars. The best that I could hope for would be to watch his body fail, limb by limb. To see his shoulders droop, his legs tremble, his belly sink into itself. And at the last, I would have to stand over his white-haired corpse and watch it fed to the flames. The hills and trees before me, the worms and lions, stones and tender buds, Daedalus's loom all wavered as if they were a fraying dream. Beneath them was the place I truly dwelt, a cold eternity of endless grief. One of my wolves had begun howling. "Quiet," I said, but she kept it up, her voice rattling off the walls, grating at my ears. I had fallen asleep before the fire, my head on the hearthstones. I sat up, bleary, skin printed with the weave of my blanket. Through the windows streamed winter light, harsh and pale. It darted into my eyes and left shadows knee-deep on the ground. I wanted to sleep again. But she whined and howled, and at last I made myself get up. I went to the door and yanked it open. "There!" The wolf shoved past me and went racing across the clearing. I watched her go. Arcturus, we called her. Most of the animals did not have names, but she had been Telegonus's favorite. She angled upwards to the cliff that overlooked the shore. I left the door hanging and went after. I had not put on a cloak, and the rising storm winds buffeted me as I climbed the peak to where Arcturus